The details behind the Diddy indictment, Taylor Swift's stalkers, Jerry Lee trying to kill Elvis. Disgraceland dives into the dark side of entertainment every Tuesday. Follow and listen to Disgraceland on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
You told me on Thursday that you had dreamt about making this the Tour Championship and therefore the FedEx Cup your first PGA Tour win. 164 starts, 30 top five finishes. How does the reality of this moment, Tommy, compare to the idea?
Well, I think I'm proud of what I've done before. Whether I've won or not, I've still been proud of my career and where I've been so far, knowing that I still have a long way to go and a lot to learn. And this doesn't change that, really. This is just hopefully one win, the first of many to come. But you can't win plenty if you don't win the first one. And I'm just so happy that I got it done and happy with my work ethic, and I'll continue to try and get better and try and be the best that I can be.
Tommy Fleetwood, fresh off his first PGA win, the Tour Championship. He had another good quote. The other one, be a good person first, golfer second.
Mm.
Overall, good guy.
Yes,
although
one of golf's good guys.
I was hoping for a little more emotion when he won.
Like a Rory-esque?
Like he, business meeting
but
type feel when he won. Right, Rory dropping to his knees. It's not a major, but isn't this kind of his major?
Yeah, I guess.
Like getting one win. Like, come on, guy. One win. And he just looked like, oh, cool. That was nice. After he won it, went right to the handshake, which is fine. Some people celebrate in that way. Some people celebrate in other ways. Good morning. It's Jeremy and Joe. Jeremy's off today. 803-0550 is the phone number. Sal coming up at 8. And Evan Lazar coming up at 8:30, 14 teams in 14 days continues. We'll do New England next. So Evan will join us coming up at 8:30 on the Patriots. The preseason finale featured the one-handed touchdown catch by Tyrell Shavers. And I saw a collective from everybody on Twitter immediately saying, okay, he just made the team with that catch. Did you think the same thing? He made the team the second he made that catch.
I think that if that's what you think, that he probably already made the team before that catch. But it was definitely a, oh, he can do that kind of moment. And
yeah,
right now, with the conversations being had about, you know, Elijah Moore and about Curtis Samuel and what the wide receiver room is going to look like in a couple of days, I think it probably went a long way into If he was on the bubble, I feel like that was enough to get him over the hump.
What are we hoping to have happen here with him? Like, are people expecting that he's going to make the team, and then he's going to play, and then he's going to do what? Like, do we think that there's a belief out there that he can do what Mac Hollins did last year?
I think...
Which, let me put the stat line in front of you. And you tell me if this is the ceiling, if it's beyond the ceiling, this is not possible for him.
Sure.
Or even if you think it's likely. I don't think anyone would think this is likely. But 31 catches, 378 yards, and 5 touchdowns. Would that be...
I think not likely, but I think...
Crazy?
If he played the same amount of snaps...
But that's the problem, right?
I think so.
I think if I read off 31 catches, 378 yards, you might go... Well, it's not. He could do that. He could have 31 catches and 378 yards. I think that might be the absolute peak.
Yeah, I would agree.
But
I would agree that it's the peak.
Him playing 70% of the snaps in order to get there.
Is that what Mac Hollins played?
Mac Hollins last year played 66%. He played 721 snaps.
I would be very surprised if he plays that.
Oh, I'd be stunned.
I'd be very surprised.
I would think there were a lot of injuries if he played that much. So, with that being said, I don't believe that he can do what Mac Hollins did last year. Even though the Mac Hollins stat line really at the end of the day doesn't look that strong. Like it's less than 400 yards. I guess if Shavers put together a couple of giant plays, right? Last year he averaged, you know, he had 170 yard. Really, he had, what is that, 25%, 30% of the yardage Mac Hollins did, but he did it on one play?
Yeah, he averaged 70 yards a game.
Because it's all he had.
Yeah.
So, I don't know. Like, what are we hoping to have happen here? Just that he's on the team? Do people believe that he's got more in there? He's not this young, developmental player. Maybe developmental, you could still argue. But, Like, he's the same age as Jerry Jeudy.
Yeah.
He's older. He's the same age as Gabe Davis. He's older than Josh Palmer.
Yep.
So he's been battling to be an NFL player for multiple seasons. It'd be a great story. He'd be a depth guy, practice squad, or more than that, probably special teams and whatnot. But I'm just wondering if there are those out there that think there is more in there, that he's a real NFL productive wide receiver.
I think they're not keeping him if they don't think he can be. He doesn't make the 50. If they don't think he can be at least what they had in Mac Hollins, I don't think they would keep him.
You think they think he could be Mac Hollins?
Yes.
I bet Mac Hollins played a lot of snaps last year.
He did, but I also think it was a lot of it was because of the injury that Keon Coleman got.
Yep.
I think if Keon's fully healthy all year, doesn't miss games,
yep,
that 66% of the snaps is probably more like 45% of the snaps.
And Cooper, remember, because Cooper got traded for and then immediately got hurt.
Yep.
And then he either missed a game or was on a limited snap count, and that impacted him as well. So Hollins, the game that he plays the least last year was the Seattle game. Mm-hmm. And that's the big Coleman game.
And that's
right?
When you have a healthy... That's the game that Cooper got hurt in.
No, Cooper got hurt the... Oh, no, you're right. He did. Yeah, that's right. I thought he didn't play that game, but he did, and he got hurt.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, on a target. So Cooper gets hurt in that game eventually. But
you have a healthy Cooper in that game and a healthy Keon Coleman.
And they're
which you didn't basically get until week 16.
Right.
Again.
And they're starting the game with Coleman and Cooper. Like,
yep.
All right, here we go. These are our two outside perimeter
yep.
receivers, and Hollins is the backup. And that's probably where they want Shavers to slide in, is that Palmer is going to be their perimeter guy that's off the line, and Coleman's right on it. And they're hoping Shavers can be – maybe what Shavers did yesterday, on Saturday, if anything, is tell the Bills, hey, you don't need Gabe Davis. You don't need to bring Gabe. I'm good. I got this. I can play special teams. Look at this catch I can make. I'm big. You know, I've got some yak ability.
Yep.
Right? Took it to the house against New England last year. I've been working my butt off for 3 years. You don't need Gabe Davis.
I definitely agree with that.
Maybe he did that.
That was if there was a statement made, I think that was definitely the statement.
But I am not thinking about him making a big impact on the receiving corps.
I'm not either.
The only way that he would have a path to that is if Coleman either gets injured or flames out. Because that's his role. His role is you're Keon Coleman's backup. And if he wants to get involved in the offense, he needs something to happen to Coleman.
And that more could than just, likely,
and
yeah.
That could.
Do you know about the true crimes that inspired a Bruce Springsteen album? Or the murders AC/DC was blamed for? How about Taylor Swift's violent stalkers? Or the suspicious deaths of Brittany Murphy and River Phoenix? These stories and more are told in the Disgraceland podcast, hosted by me, Jake Brennan, every Tuesday, where I dive deep into subjects from the dark side of music history and entertainment. So follow and listen to Disgraceland on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
That doesn't have to just be injury. It could be him just stinking up the joint.
Yep.
But
I would be surprised, but yeah.
The way camp has sounded so far, that does seem like a surprise. Other takeaways from Saturday's game in the 53-man roster. So Jordan, this isn't from the game, but there's a report that Jordan Phillips is going to sign back with the Bills. And
with the intent to be on the 53-man roster, not the practice squad, was the report I saw.
Right.
I think it was Ryan Talbot that had that.
Yeah. Suspension fill-in?
We talked about Ogunjobi on Friday. We both kind of left thinking, I think he's probably gone. If not right away, right when he's eligible to get back from suspension. And I think it was Sale.
Right.
And maybe we'll see if Sale was able to find out the language around
what they actually save.
If he's on the 53-man roster to start week one, then his base salary becomes guaranteed.
Yeah.
And I don't know if that happens if he's suspended or if, you know, so I have thought really long and hard that like Ogunjobi's not making the team. He didn't play in the preseason.
Right.
And Michael Hoyt, the other guy getting suspended.
He looked good again on Saturday.
Played a ton.
Yeah.
So if we're just going off of that alone, it was to me not a good sign that Ogunjobi wasn't playing at all. When you're like, hey, you're going to miss 6 weeks, we're going to get you geared up and ready to play so that you know, when you are back from suspension, you can hit the ground running. That never happened. And Dwayne Carter was out there late in that game. Late. And he's been really, frankly, invisible when he's been out there. He just really hasn't made much of an impact. So, to me, the writing on the wall for me is Dwayne Carter, and because I had already thought that Larry Ogunjobi was.
It really, I feel like this is why that position right now, with Phillips on his way, becomes maybe the most interesting position for tomorrow. Because
did it feel like a position that needed a Jordan Phillips? Because I got to be honest, I didn't.
I didn't think so. No, I really didn't. He even said at the end of last year, like, it's Buffalo or bust for me. Like, yeah. I'll retire. But that's what I thought would happen. I thought
he was going to retire, yeah.
He looked like a player that, you know, he wasn't terrible, I guess, last year. But he's not somebody that I'm desperate to bring back.
No, I didn't.
For any reason.
Yeah.
The reason it's interesting to me, though, is if he replaces, almost anybody he would replace would be interesting. Because if it's Larry Ogunjobi, that's, hey, you signed this guy, you wanted this guy, he got suspended, it didn't work out, it's already over. If they cut Dwayne Carter, it's, woo, third round pick being cut 1 year later. And
yeah, it's
the one other name, again, I think there's only three names I'm thinking about for this, and the third name's interesting too, is Daquan Jones. Because the Bills save $5.5 million on their cap if they were to release Daquan Jones. So is this that? Is this Ogunjobi's going to go on the shelf? He'll come back middle of the year. We're going to keep going with Dwayne Carter. We're up against the cap.
Yep.
And, hey, Jordan Phillips will cost us $1 million. And Daquan Jones over here costs us $7 million. And is he seven times more valuable for us than Phillips is? I think for almost his entire Bills career, and I would have thought still, he's a more all-around good player than Phillips is at that position, but is he worth, you know, is he not worth maybe getting the $5 million back? That's the other player that they could move on from.
Yeah.
So whoever Phillips replaces, I think it's probably interesting for tomorrow. Coming up at 7, I want to get to what the defense is going to look like for week one. Mm. How confident are we in the defense for week one?
Like, how confident are we that we know the lineup for week one, or just generally speaking?
More than that. More productivity,
okay.
Confidence that they can slow down Baltimore. They did it in the playoffs, turnovers. Do we think maybe they need turnovers again, the way that their roster
might
look like?
They're always going to need turnovers.
In week one.
I think their defense is built to get turnovers.
We'll get to that, because I think they're that's true, and I would expect they'd get them, but I think their offseason was geared towards being good enough on defense that they could not get turnovers in a single game and still manage.
Hmm.
And I wonder if that's true, the way that it's going to look like against the Ravens, depending on Trey White, who we got to get more updates on. But we have something on that. We'll get that to you coming up at 7 o'clock. 803-0550, the phone number, if you want to get a call in on the way back here on WGR.
Do you know about the true crimes that inspired a Bruce Springsteen album? Or the murders AC/DC was blamed for? How about Taylor Swift's violent stalkers? Or the suspicious deaths of Brittany Murphy and River Phoenix? These stories and more are told in the Disgraceland podcast, hosted by me, Jake Brennan, every Tuesday, where I dive deep into subjects from the dark side of music history and entertainment. So follow and listen to Disgraceland on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.